Welcome and thank you for joining us for today's IBM teleconference, How to Set Up Application Server to Access DB2 ZOS with High Availability. Today's teleconference will be recorded, will last approximately 60 minutes, and will include a live question and answer session. In this teleconference, we'll walk through the step-by-step process to set up a distributed application environment, assessing a DB2 data sharing group for high availability. The speaker for today's teleconference, Mariella Weirach, IBM Distinguished Engineer, DB2 for ZOS Development. At this time, I would like to hand it over to our speaker, Mariella Weirach. Ma'am, you may begin.
Thank you. Thank you for joining the call on a, in my opinion, very important topic in a lot of companies. What I want to cover in today's call is have a short review on the DB2 ZOS concepts for availability, review the client configuration and changes in the directions we want to take you, and then go over the details of enabling DB2 SysFlex workload balancing in the application server, plus some considerations around configuring application servers and settings that should be in sync with DB2 ZOS settings. So if you go to slide number 4, it shows the features we introduced in DB2 for high availability. And actually, as I think it's well acknowledged in the industry, DB2 ZOS has the best, the most features to enable for continuous availability across both planned as well as unplanned outages. And a lot of components play a role there. We have the elimination of single point of failures across the whole software, hardware and software stack. So you have multiple CPs, multiple I/O paths. You can set up parallel SysFlex with multiple ZOS images and then have DB2 ZOS data sharing where multiple DB2 systems can access the same data. This allows to do, first of all, planned role in upgrades and maintenance, and therefore one system can always be up in order to have the data accessible while other systems are upgraded or maintenance is applied. We enhanced this idea of continuous availability also into the application world via online schema evaluation and also online utilities. And online reorg, I think, is the biggest example on that. So this is really to eliminate single point of failure or remove the causes for planned outages. In case that a failure happens, and in reality there will always be a failure happen somewhere, the goal is not to make the hardware or software absolutely failure-free. This would not be affordable. The idea is to have a backup which can step in case a failure happens and isolate the failure to the lowest granularity. It's the same concept as in an airplane, that you always have two of all the critical components. So if the primary fails, the secondary can dynamically step in and do the work. And we also put a lot of effort in also try to automatically recover from those failures if possible and do it fast. Mm-hmm. So from an from a DB2 systems perspective, as you can see, there's a lot of effort in making the system continuous available. The problem is, or the challenge is that a lot of applications are now on distributed servers, accessing DB2 ZOS as an enterprise data server. And for an end user, it is only important that he can access the data and not which software product is available and which not. So it means an end user sees the end-to-end availability and not just the availability of a DB2 system. Therefore, we need to ensure that as long as one member of a data sharing group is up and running, that the application server is set up correctly in a way that it finds this member that is up and running member and can execute the work. So that's the challenge we need to address, and there a lot of companies have still problems which motivated actually this presentation. Going to slide number two, the first step is to set up DVIPER and SysFlex distributor onto the DRS system. And this is still very easily done because this is all managed in the control of the DOS environment, and typically systems programmers talk very well to each other. So what is the idea behind it? That that you set up two DVIPERs, one is a group DVIPER and a set of member DVIPERs. And what happens is that the application server gets as a connection information the IP address of the DVIPER, the virtual IP address, and then this request goes to the SysFlex distributor as shown on path number one. And SysFlex distributor takes the workload management information of the data sharing group and distributes the request either to the system DB2A or to the member DB2B, depending on which member is more able to take work, depending on the workload characteristics during that period of time. So in this example, the request is actually routed to DB2B, and then the system responds to the client and provides its freezing port for resolution of in-depth transactions. What this functionality gives us is, first of all, as long as a member is up and running, SysFlex distributor will find this member. So we will always get a connection from an application server to that member as long as one member is up and running. Going to the next slide, there is a second benefit to it, besides the first one, which is actually the most important one, that we get a connection level workload balancing between those members. Remember, every time a new connection is established, SysFlex distributor takes the workload balancing, workload management information, and accordingly balances the request. There are also two drawbacks which may or may not be significant in some environments. The first one is SysFlex distributor primary sits on one member, on one helper, and then it would route either to the same helper or to a different helper. And this is okay for a couple of requests, but it may result into a slightly higher response time if it has to go to a different helper. And if this is done in a high workload environment, this can, and with a very shoddy application, this can result in a response time difference between the different members. So we will later say that this workload balancing allows to directly go to each of the members and doesn't need to take the detour via one L4 where the SysFlex distributor primary is located. And the second little drawback is that this is a connection level workload balancing, but with the application servers in today's world, They use pretty much all connection pooling and connection caching. Therefore, the lifetime of a connection is typically very long. What it means is that connections are established typically in an offload period of time, and the workload management information during that time are used to distribute the connections. But then over the period of the time, period of the day, the workload changes, but the connection will not wander around with it. They stick as they were created, and then they are just reused. So connection level workload balancing is not sufficient in today's world to help with the workload distribution according to the utilization of the system. So we would rather need a transaction level workload balancing than a connection level workload balancing. So what we need is a deviper setup on the COS environment plus the Sysflex workload balancing setup on the application server to ensure the highest availability in a distributed environment. So I get this question very frequently. You don't need either or the other, but you need both. DVIPER helps you to always make sure that you find one member if it's up and running, but Sysflex workload balancing does the best job in distributing work on a transaction level boundary. Going to slide number 7, I want to review shortly how the client configuration typically is today and how we envision it going forward. So until DB2 Connect version 7, you needed to have a DB2 Connect server pretty much in the middle, configured as a server or gateway, or have it locally on the application server. And the main functionality of this DB2 Connect was actually to do a protocol conversion. It's like translating English into French and back. So the DB2 COS did not understand the protocol, the communication protocol the DB2 distributed environment used. Starting with DB2 Connect version 8, all the communication is handled in DRDA. Therefore, this protocol conversion is not necessary any longer. And what you saw actually with Java-based clients using a type 4 direct connection, we actually already opened up a direct path from the application server to the DB2 COS data sharing group, which is now very frequently used, or I would say it's becoming more the typical communication path. For the C-based clients, which is all ODBC applications or .NET application, for example, the typical communication path is still via DB2 Connect gateways. Even we opened this communication up to, I call it a type 4, like the RDA communication, because type 4 is actually a Java term. But it means that we should have a direct communication from the application server to the DB2 COS data sharing group. And this functionality was provided in the IBM Data Server Driver 9.5. Going to the next slide, it gives you some more information about the Data Server Driver 9.5 and also a link where you can look up more information. So the idea is that those clients have a much smaller footprint than a full installed DB2 Connect. So therefore, it doesn't take so many resources. You still need to have a DB2 Connect license entitlement. This needs to be installed in order to be able to connect to DB2 ZOS. And for availability, we added Sysflex workload balancing directly into the data server driver 9.5 coming with 6.3. And if you have a choice now to upgrade, you should actually upgrade to FixPack 4 or later. Going to the next slide, slide number 9, it shows how we envision the client configuration going forward. So we would like to see that the application server directly connect to the DB2 ZOS system, and therefore eliminating a potential point of failure in the middle. So what we are planning to do, is move required function that was provided by DB2 Connect into the client or into the DB2 ZOS environment. So the first step we already did was moving Sysflex workload balancing functionality into the client, so it's available in the Java-based client as well as in the C-based client now, therefore eliminating the need of a DB2 Connect server in order to do Sysflex workload balancing. And the other two main functions, monitoring and configuration control, will be moved either into the client or into the DB2 ZOS system with upcoming releases or new components. Going to the next slide, slide number 10, I want you to walk through the basic basic functionality of Sysflex workload balancing, as this is a functionality at the application server and not on DB2 ZOS itself, or placed together with functionality on DB2 ZOS. So it was first introduced in DB2 Connect in a server functionality, also known as Connection Concentrator. Even I think that this term was overloaded or kind of misused, because we not necessarily concentrate connection, but actually sometimes even send out connection. You had to set a value max connections, or actually connections at least one bigger than max agent to enable Sysflex workload balancing. And what happens is, if you look at the picture on the lower half of the slide, there were two layers enabled. One was the logical agent that did hold connection to the client, and on the right side, the so-called agent that holds the connection to the DB2 ZOS system. So those would show up as connections in DB2 ZOS. And what the Sysflex workload balancing does, it disconnects the line between logical agent and agent at commit or rollback time, and connects it based on workload management information that are provided from the DB2 ZOS system to an agent that goes to one DB2 ZOS ZOS system or the other. I mean, one member in the data sharing group or the other. And therefore, at transaction start time, the workload management information are reviewed and routing decisions are done at that time to go to member 1 or to member A or to member B. Going to the next slide, this is basically the same algorithm in the JCC type 4 driver, or I think the IBM data server driver for JDBC and SQLJ is now the newer term. So this functionality was enabled in in the drivers that came with DB2 Connect version 8 Fixpack 10. What is very important is at that point in time, Sysbacks workload balancing was enabled at the data source level that is defined with JDBC 2.0 standard, and it was not enabled with on the driver manager function that is defined in the JDBC 1.2 standard. And if you have a WebLogic application server, they would still use the driver manager get connection, and therefore in order to get this workload balancing working, it would be required to have DB2 connect on a 9.5 level, because we enabled Sysbacks workload balancing on the driver manager level in DB2 connect 9.5. But as you see on the lower half, the functionality is, the algorithm is actually very, pretty much the same. You have the transport on the right side holding the connection to DB2 and the logical connections holding the connection to the connection object in the thread. And at transaction start time, the line will be close between logical connection and transport in order to get the end-to-end connection from the thread or from the client until the DB2 system. And this allows us for transaction-level workload balancing as well as handling outage scenarios, which I want to discuss further down in the presentation. Going to the next slide, those are the parameters that you need to set on the application server side in order to enable this functionality. The first one is enable sysflex WLB equals yes. So default is false, disabled, and you would need to set it to yes in order to enable this functionality. The second property, which is strongly recommended, is that max transport objects by definition is, or by default, is set to -1, which means there's no limit. And it means this is the maximum number of connections to the DB2 server from this data source. I would recommend to set this value higher than the number of connections you allow in the connection pool, because this allows, and it should be actually a number of members in the data sharing group times the number of connections, because this allows to fan out, and workload balancing can happen on existing connections instead of pulling down connections to one member in order to enforce max transport if the request needs to be routed to a different member. Going to slide number 13, there are additional global properties that should be sent to handle different outage scenarios. So you could set max transport objects on a driver level, but this, from my perspective, makes only sense if there are multiple data source definitions that go to the same DB2 system, but are only different in properties like current schema, current function path, and so on. The next one is max transport object idle timeout, or transport object idle time. That is the time in second. A connection stays idle in the pool before it's closed. And the default value is 60 seconds, which seems a very appropriate default. The next property is max transport object wait time. This is the wait time an application waits on a transport to become available. The default value is 5 seconds. This may be adjusted if needed. to get a clear SQL exception back to the application that no transport is available to connect to DB2CRS. And the last two values, blocking read connection and login timeout, deal with strange network behavior. The first one is setting the socket timeout value so that if a network disappears, the application sits or the driver doesn't sit forever waiting on a reply, but times out. And the login timeout is a new connection is established and no SQL flow is coming. This protects from misuse of the connection for other terms. So this should be this connection should be removed. Going to the next slide, slide number 14. This shows the same algorithm how it's enabled in the Z-based client, which came with Data Server Driver 9.5 Fixed Pack 3. And you see it's conceptually the same algorithm now within a C process. We have some limited XA support in this case because some of the XA coordinators use one C process or one connection to send the SQL and another connection to do the commit handling. As DB2CRS is not supporting this, it requires the SQL and the XA coordination on a single connection. Those applications still need to go via DB2 Connect Server in order to handle this communication. The next slide shows an example how to configure SysFlex workload balancing in the Z-based client. And this is done via an XML file, which is called DB2DSDriverCFG, which needs to be manually configured, at least right now, in order to add the workload balancing parameters under the database connectivity information. And the next slide actually shows an example how this would look. So you have the database name as an example, SCLEC1, and it provides the host IP address and port number. And as I said before, this host address should be a group divider address. And then under the WLB tag, you find the same enable WLB parameter, which needs to be set to true, the max transport value, which you can set to by default, it's minus one. And then max transport idle time, max transport wait time, and max refresh interval. The previous two I already explained. It's very similar to what we have in the JCC driver. Max refresh interval is actually the interval in seconds that the workload manager provided list. Server list is refreshed. So in the C-based clients, we did set it down to 30 seconds, and it is configurable. We will add this capability in the JCC driver pretty soon, too. The ACR properties are enabled by default if enable WLB is true. There are very few circumstances where you don't want to have those values set. That's why we externalized it. Going to the next slide, I like to explain how the connection, how it works that the connection is established in order to get this fault-tolerant system. So on the initial connection to the DB2 data sharing group, so you have an application server. It has a distributed divider, the group divider, in the connectivity information. And it's used to go to SysTex distributor. SysTex distributor picks a DB2 member that is available and routes a request there, and on the reply, DB2CUS returns a so-called member IP list with the WM weights. At that point in time, the client has information which members are available and what is the relative weight of each member in order to do the correct weight information. And whenever a transaction starts, it uses this workload management weights in order to determine to which members the transaction request should go. The disconnect at commit would happen under a number of criteria need to be fulfilled in order to make the disconnect happen so that this connection can be reused by a different transaction from a different client. So the first one is no open withhold corridors. The bad story is that both the JDBC as well as the ODBC standard have withhold corridors defined as default, so those need to be explicitly turned off. No declared global temp tables, so those needs to be dropped. And no packages that are bound with keep dynamic yes. Those are the most typical examples that would prevent a disconnect between the connection to DB2 and the agent or transport and the logical connection. And the reason is that the same application may continue and return to the state information that was left behind at commit. Important to know, rollback always cleans up, so rollback always leaves the connection in a reusable state. Going to the next slide, we added actually a new command, a new display DDF command that displays this member list with the IP weights in the output. So the APOR number is in the slide, so you can, it's only a couple of months old, so you can check if this is applied or not, because this information is very often usable if you think that the workload management is working different than you expected, then you can check the weights in order to verify what workload manager thinks how it should be distributed. And you see them as relative weights, like in the example below, it's 45, 42, and 18. So it would expect that slightly more connections goes to the IP address 105 than to 103, and 104 should only get a couple of requests. Okay, how is the behavior at a connection error? If you move to slide number 19, it goes to the different situations. So what DB2 does as a part of the commit response, it actually indicates if this connection can be reused or if any state information are left behind. And we call this the reuse indicator. So if the first SQL statement in a transaction is sent, but the transaction fails and this reuse counter is okay, it means that the JCC or the client, the JCC or the C-based client, can actually transparently replay the same SQL statement to a different member. So there will be no errors reported back to the application. The client handles this error condition completely transparently. And any set statement that came back at the previous commit will be replayed in order to associate the logical connection state before the first SQL is replayed. So if a problem exists connecting to the server with the first SQL statement in a transaction, this situation would be completely transparently handled. Now, if a subsequent SQL fails, so SQL 1 and 2 were executed, and now SQL 3 and the transaction fails, but the 3 use counter was okay, then a 30108 reuse error is returned to the application. And this means then that the transaction is rolled back and that the connection state was reestablished. So the client is replaying the set information to recover the connection state, but the application needs to retry the transaction like any other SQL error. The reason is that the state of the SQL, even if we would capture the SQL that are executed in the transaction, at the time we would replay them, the data may have changed, and therefore the application logic may have decided to actually execute different SQL statements, and therefore the client cannot handle this transparently. This retry needs to happen by the application. But as I said, the connection is already in a usable state again, and it's just a matter of replaying SQL statements. If the reuse was not okay, for example, a hold cursor position was in existence, then the application gets a 381 connection failure message, and this means that the connection is returned to its initial state. But the application needs to reestablish the logical connection state and retry the transaction. So it would need to handle that lost connection states are recovered. So this is for outage situations. If the member list, for whatever reason, doesn't show a usable member any longer, then the client will always go back to the dviper and retry to make sure that there's really no member available as a last resort. As I said before, the dviper is a very critical piece in the overall setup to make sure that if a DB2COS system is up and running in the data sharing group, that the application server will find it. Going to slide number 20, it shows an example of the WebSphere connection pooling screen in the WebSphere administration console. And you see different properties defined here, which are explained in the next slide, slide 21. I think the most important one are max connections, min connection, and unused timeout. Max connection is the maximum connection from this JVM instance. Min connections is this number of connections will always stay even the unused timeout is reached, and connections that sit idle in the pool will be closed. So for example, if min connection is 2, max connection is 10, then connections that are in the pool for unused timeout, for example, 120 seconds, they will be closed until only 2 connections are open, and those 2 connections stay pretty much for the lifetime of the application server. Going to slide number 22, just a reminder that the connection object pool is maintained by WebSphere or by the application server, and it allows, it's not just saving the connection objects, but also the connection objects hold other objects, references to other objects like prepared statement objects, So if the connection is torn down, those references will all disappear, those objects will all disappear. So a connection object holds much more than just a physical connection to DB2, and therefore it makes sense to pool them for a meaningful period of time. Slide number 23 shows an end-to-end example for WebSphere application server example. So you see the JDBC driver is part of the JVM, and then the connection pool managed by WebSphere has links to, it's pretty much like a rubber object around logical connection objects, and then the line to the transport is close at the first SQL statement to the member required. So I get very frequently the question, which connection pool should be used, and the clear recommendation to always use the connection pool and per se the caching which is closest to the application, because the caching or pooling has more value than done on at a later point. And as I mentioned before, SysTex workload balancing should be enabled for best availability, for continuous availability. Going to the next couple of slides, I want to go through some best practice to make to coordinate certain settings between the application server and DB2 COS. And if those are set up correctly, a lot of companies already confirmed that the availability of their application environment, application server environment, actually improved significantly. The first recommendation on slide number 24 is, if there are active threats in the environment, and this can happen in two situations. First, all WebSphere runs on DOS and uses the type 2 driver for DOS that is using ORS attached facility. And the second one is a type 4 connection, and it holds on to resources like withhold calls or keep dynamic yes. And those are the situations where the reuse indicator was not okay, not set to okay. In those cases, the connection cannot turn inactive, and therefore the tuning recommendation is first that the connection unused time in the WebSphere connection definition should be set to a smaller value than the DB2 idle thread timeout. And the reason is that WebSphere should clean up connections in a normal way before DB2 considers this an idle thread and cancels those threads. Because if those threads cancel, then they would show up in WebSphere as stale connections, and applications over have a hard time handling those stale connections. This is actually the biggest or the reason, most frequently the reason for a WebSphere restart. And the second reason, second recommendation is that the min connection should be set to zero. So there should not be connections sitting around for a longer period of time. And the connection unused time should not be higher than 10 to 15 minutes. Actually, I like the default of 120 seconds, which is in our processing environment today is already a very, very long time period. So 10 to 15 minutes, it's like infinity. In order to allow for cleaning up of unused resources in DB2. So those two recommendations, if they are implemented and there are still canceled connections in DB2, it normally means that the application has a problem and leaks connections. Going to slide number 25, those are the important CPOM values in DB2 COS. CONDIVAT is the maximum number of distributed connections, and this number is normally very high. It's I think 10,000 by default, and it includes inactive as well as active connections. And you need to remember that DB2 queues the number of incoming requests if max dbed reached until con dbed. So the difference between max dbed and con dbed is the potential queue length for requests, incoming requests. So the next important counter is max dbed, which is actually the number of concurrently active connections. And this value should be set very conservatively to what DB2 handles. So this parameter is actually like the traffic light on an entry to a highway to make sure that everything flows nicely within the server and you only allow as much in as the server can really handle. It's okay to queue up some requests, but you should never overload the system because this may become a problem for the server and then the whole system is impacted. And the third one is CMStat inactive, and this allows for turning the thread inactive so it will not hold resources in DB2 COS any longer. And the last critical one is idle thread timeout, which I said default is 120 seconds, and I really like the timeout. You should never ever set it to zero, because this is taking away a very important safety net for DB2. So going to slide number 26, you see the color-coded relationship between the different values. So you have the unused timeout in blue, which is matching up with the idle thread timeout in DB2. The max connection in the application server should line up with the number of connections in or number of logical connections in the client. And the max agent or transports line up with con dbed. And as I said, max dbed needs to be set as determined by the system load. On my last slide, slide number 27, I added a configuration which lately gets into the discussion. In the larger environment, there seems to be a setup common where you have two data center 1 and data center 2. Each is running a parallel sysplex with DB2 data sharing. And then, for example, queue replication is used to replicate the data. So basically, both data centers have the same set of data available. What you should do is use sysplex workload balancing within a data center to route the workload. But if one data center has an outage, or major components of one data center have an outage, then the network router should be used to route away into the other data center in order to allow for cleanup and always predictive conditions for between data and incoming workload. Just remember, queue replication is not synchronous, it's asynchronous. So a dynamic routing on a lower level may mean that the application assumes that data is there which may not be propagated yet. So you really need to step back one layer and say, okay, this data center has a major problem, and we now make a routing decision to the second data center to handle the incoming work. So just consider this if the setup is used in your company. So on slide number 28 are a few references which may be interesting for you. We have a very new red book on distributed function, which is out a couple of months now, I think, and it's a good reference. So with that, I like to return to the operator who gives you instruction for the pulling.
Thank you, Mariella. Now we would like to ask you to participate in a brief electronic survey. Right after the survey, we will have a live Q&A session with the presenter. Your feedback is important to us, and we do appreciate the time you take to answer these few questions. To participate, simply press the star key followed by the number that best corresponds to your choice. Please listen to all options before making your selection. Question number one, please evaluate your level of satisfaction with today's teleconference. If it was high, press star 1. If it was medium, press star 2. If it was low, press star 3. Polls are open. Question number two, was the level of technical information presented in this teleconference? If it was at the right level, press star 1. If it was not technical enough, press star 2. If it was more technical than I needed to hear, press star 3. Polls are open. Thank you. Question 3. What version of DB2 for ZOS are you currently using? If V9, press star 1. If V8, press star 2. If V7 or below, press star 3. Our final question is question 4. Now, we hope you've enjoyed the teleconference today. Please let us know if you are interested in receiving additional information or follow-up regarding the products discussed today. If yes, press star 1. If no, press star 2. And that concludes our survey. Thank you all for your participation. Now, let's move on to your questions. To ask your question, please press the star key followed by the digit 1 on your telephone at any time. Again, to ask a question, please press star, then 1. Now, at this time, I'd like to turn the call back over to our speaker while we wait for questions.
Okay. So please ask question if something or anything was unclear or you like to have more explanation.
Again, that would be star 1. One moment for our first response. Actually, Ms. Weirock, I have no requests at this time.
Okay. Sounds good.
Well, as I have no requests, I would like to turn the call back over to you for closing comments.
I want to thank you for joining the call, and I would like to ask you to get back and verify this information in your own company, and please let me know if you have more questions. My email is on the presentation. Thank you.